Hi, I'm Emily Hanks, host of She Speaks Bravo. Listen for unnecessarily insightful recaps about current Bravo shows. Check it out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, all you cats and kittens, Adam Ray here. Thanks for listening, watching to the About Last Night podcast. Welcome back to the show. If you haven't subscribed yet, subscribe right here, baby, on YouTube. Enjoy the show every Monday. Audio and is also available for you, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your pods. Join the fun, join the party, subscribe. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at ALN Podcast. Follow me at Adam Ray Comedy on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter. Tour dates at AdamRayComedy.com. This week I'll be in Detroit for two shows at the House of Comedy as part of the comedy festival out there. Come see me, House of Comedy, two shows, September 17th. And then September 30th through October 1st, I'll be at the Improv in Raleigh, North Carolina. I think those are the dates. It's the last weekend in September, early October. Raleigh Improv, North Carolina. Come see your boy. Tickets at AdamRayComedy.com. Got some dates with Sal Vocano coming up in Knoxville, Alabama, and Atlanta. And then San Jose, Santa Rosa, Sacramento. We got Seattle, Portland, Vegas coming up. All at AdamRayComedy.com. We can get your Adam Ray merch, your ALN podcast merch. Tell your friends, tell your family about the pod. Spread the good word. We got a lot of bangers coming up. Anthony Jeselnik coming up next week, and some more hitters after that. Gene Smart from Hacks, Adam Devine. A lot of good shit coming. Young Rock, of course, premieres November 4th on NBC. Welcome to Chippendales comes out November 22nd on Hulu. And working on a comedy special as well. So with all the bullshit out of the way, enjoy this special episode today with a second time ALN guest. She hasn't been on since the Brad Williams days. You know her from Mad TV, her countless stand-up specials and late-night appearances, and she's just a gangster in the comedy world, has an insane fan base, and she's fucking hilarious. So enjoy the great Angela Johnson.
Hey, it's Herbert, and you're listening to the About Last Night podcast, you slippery little son of a bitch.
Welcome back to the show. Angela Johnson here. Legend, baller, dancer, comedian, actress. I'd almost say baller first before dancer, because you have the swagger of a dancer. And I'd say I noticed that almost instantaneously when I first met you. I was like, oh, you carry yourself like you've been doing this for a fucking while.
Because I'm a tomboy. So I
Yeah, you are?
The second I operate in my feminine, that's when I'm least confident.
Yes.
And that's when you'll see like, oh, she's a little bit insecure. But when I have like my tennies on,
yeah,
and like either my sweats or like jeans or whatever, then I have a swagger to me because I feel like I could fight anybody.
Holy.
Because I'm casual.
Have you gotten into fights? Let's shift gears.
No.
You do strike me as someone though who could grab a hair.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, a head of hair. And do some twisting and turning. And,
when I was young.
Yeah.
When I was young. I'm not confrontational, to be honest. Like, right. I do not love confrontation. But I have this, like, essence about me that it's, like, I can turn it on when I need to. I don't want to.
Yeah.
Like, that. I did a joke a long time ago. I was like, listen, I don't want to fight you. But.
What part, does that come from just, like, I don't know. I guess in all of us, right, we all have that switch that can flip and turn things up a notch, and push comes to shove and shove comes to push, and you're like, there's going to be some shoving and some pushing, and I'm going to throw down. But it's like there's something that I guess stops us from that. But did you see people fight around you like at school? Like, was there something that made you just go, oh, that's not for me? Or was it just like, I want to try to talk through this.
That was my dream was, so, I brought you my book. It's in the car.
Please.
I'll get it after
this.
But my book,
talk all about it,
is called Who Do I Think I Am? Stories of Chola Wishes and Caviar Dreams, because I wanted to be a chola. I wanted to be in a gang. I wanted to get in fights and like all of that kind of stuff. Now it's so like opposite of who I really am. But growing up, it's like what I idolized and what I wanted to be. Like, I wanted that thug life. Like, I would ask my mom, like, Mom, do we have any family members in prison? Like, I was looking for street cred. And she was like, no, we're not that family. What are you talking about?
Yeah. How do I get, how do I get some blood Crips at my birthday party? Did you know anybody?
Ours was Norteños and Sureños. That's what ours was.
That's the equivalent?
Yeah, yeah.
In
red and blue. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. In NorCal, right? Where you grew up?
Yeah.
What part exactly again?
San Jose.
San Jose, that's right.
Yeah, Bay Area.
That's why you rep. Well, that's, I mean, that must have been extra special then to be a Raiderette.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Any family members that were fucking freaking out because they were diehard Raider fans? Most.
Yeah. Well, my Tia Mary, she's 102 right now.
Currently?
Yes. She's still with us, 102. Out. Shout out to Tia Mary.
What's the secret, by the way?
She didn't have any kids. That's her secret.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. My fiance and I go back and forth, but that. It's pieces of info like that that make me go, oof.
I know.
Might be skipping this boat.
I know. I know. But my Tia Mary, she's 102. And listen, I've done a couple things. I've done a couple movies. I've done some TV shows.
Oh, yeah.
I have a few hour specials out there. She has a picture of me in my Raiderette uniform, my Raiderette headshot in a frame in the living room. And anytime anybody comes to the house, whether it's the cable guy, the mailman, any kind of vendor of some sort coming to the house to do any kind of service, she always shows them my picture and she says, this is my niece. She was a Raiderette. Oh. Skip all the movies or anything.
Her most prized
moment
and highlight Raiderette. Of your life.
Mm-hmm. There it is.
The book is, I'm about 3 audio chapters deep.
Oh, thank you for even listening at all.
Fuck yeah, and I'm going to finish it. I don't think I've read an actual book in quite some time.
Yeah.
Once audiobooks became the thing. And also, it's just like, I don't know, to get to hear it in your voice.
Right, right.
I feel like is the way to do it. You know what I'm saying? Because like, I don't know, there's just so much. It's the same way when sometimes, I don't know if you get deep in a text exchange and you're like, God, there's no tone. There's no, I can't like a smiley face or emoji just not doing it. I need to hear to really communicate.
We should pick up the phone again is what you're saying?
I guess.
We should start doing phone calls again?
But we all have some people.
I am that person, though.
I just need to text.
I am that person. I am the phone call person.
Yeah.
That, like, I do surprise FaceTimes. Like, I'm that jerk. Like, ooh, I'm the one who is
what's the percentage
just,
of pickups?
It's pretty good, actually. Although I did surprise FaceTime somebody today, and he did not answer. And yikes. I was like, okay, that was give or die. I didn't know if that one was going to work or not. But I do love to surprise FaceTime people. Mm. And for the most part, it's like a happy reception. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What's this about?
Yeah.
You know, like.
And then you just say, no reason. How you doing?
How
and then they're
you?
Like,
I miss you.
I don't know what to say. Yeah. Why can't we text about this and then move on with our lives? You have a really great I mean, obviously, delivery, cadence, all that. The sound of your voice is easy to listen to, which
thanks.
I feel like helps a lot, especially with almost 8 hours of the book, right?
Thank you, audio. Because if you read some of my TikTok comments, they will say the opposite about my voice.
Fuck that. I know. TikTok audience is like, I don't know. As much as TikTok has to offer, there's like, I feel like the audience, the trolls, the Yelpers, the people that really want to, they're on there so much that they get... they get upset with themselves, I think, for being on there so much.
Yeah.
It's like you almost get, something gets pent up, you get angry, and you're like, I need to channel this somehow.
Yeah.
Why not do it while I don't want to get off TikTok, but I'm definitely angry now.
Yeah.
From knowing that I've spent 4 to 8 hours on this app.
Yeah.
Do you have a TikTok, I don't know, something that you can get lost in a rabbit hole? Recipes, dances.
Oh, I love watching people cooking food.
Yeah, I'm obsessed.
Love that. Especially when it's like something that I feel like I could actually make. Mm. Because if it looks too hard, then I'm like, I'm never going to do this.
Yeah.
Let me find something easy. And I never do the easy thing too. But at least if I think that I can possibly make this, then I'm like, oh yeah, let's watch more of these.
Like a PB&J.
Oh, and I like, yes.
Yeah.
But I also go down the rabbit holes of like pimple popping videos.
Obsessed. Let's get into this right now.
Bro, do you watch teeth cleaning videos?
What?
Mother effer teeth cleaning videos, bro.
Like just a can't, like a...
Where they go in and scrape the tartar off of like people who have never brushed their teeth in their entire life.
Oh, no.
It's unreal.
It's painful, first of all, to be on the receiving end of that.
Oh, yeah.
But wait, so watching it, what's more I guess, rewarding watching those or the pimple pops.
Okay, so those actually have like ASMR sound to it. So if you enjoy sounds of that, right? Yeah, that and okay, here's another one. This one's kind of gross. You don't hear the people, thank God. But okay, this one's kind of gross, but I'm going to just admit it because we're talking about it. Ingrown toenails.
Dear God.
Pedicures.
Oh.
It's gross, but I can't stop watching them.
Because why?
It's the same thing about pimple popping things.
Yeah.
I don't know what is so gratifying about watching a blackhead be released into the earth and be like, you're free.
It's almost like when you see in, I don't know what movies, let's say Pee-wee's Big Adventure, when he lets all the animals out of the shelter.
Okay, sure.
You know?
Let's go
there's
there.
A sense of like enjoyment of like, they're free.
Yeah.
Let them out. They're not supposed to be in those cages.
Yeah, same thing.
Same thing with
ingrown
blackhead.
Toenail. Like, it's been painful. You can see the pressure on that toe. And then they use these tools that it's so smooth the way they cut the toenail.
Wow.
It's, like, really cool.
Have you had yourself...
And disgusting, of course.
And maybe this is a spoiler, but is there a chapter? I like how thorough you have gotten thus far in the book just about what made you funny. What I really resonated with was, and I'm going to forget, the teacher that told you you were going to be on SNL one day.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I think every comedian has some professor, teacher, faculty member that was like, hey, I'm not, like, I'm recognizing that you got something.
Yeah.
There's a time and a place. Or fucking the teacher that goes, let me find a way for you to do this more in class because it's awesome and I want to encourage it.
Yeah.
And then I think we all had teachers, and more often than not, they were just like, stop being fucking annoying and distracting.
Yeah.
That was really cool to hear that, and because I feel like that, I think that's the case more than not. But I just from talking to people about that time in their life and developing their comedic sensibility, a lot have told me that they didn't have any that kind of pulled them aside and that were like, oh fucking, you got there's something that you should really hone here.
I mean, there's that as well as like there's great to have somebody support you in like who you are, but then there's also like. I didn't know that I was funny. Like, I didn't know, like, my dad is funny, my sibling, like, we're all, like, we're just a funny family, you know? And so I was just, like, being my personality. And I think it didn't strike me that I am different than some people.
Yes.
Like, I was just, like, operating.
It's fair to say that, right? A comedian, you're different.
I guess, right?
In a good way.
Yeah. So I didn't know. And then to like have somebody be like, oh yeah, go do this in Mr. Rourke's class. Oh, do this. Like Miss Zamora was just like my cheerleader and almost like my hype man. Like, right. Go do it. And be like, really? Okay.
So you had like, your ability to like want to perform or like just be in front of people was never really an issue. And so then you had people kind of like pointing that out to you.
I was shy growing up.
Okay.
Younger, preschool, like... my toddler years, very shy growing up.
Yeah.
My
most
first
preschoolers
year,
are shy.
I mean, I guess, yeah.
I don't remember any like big dick energy in preschool. Like some kid walking in just dropping his lunchbox being like, I ain't reading today.
So right.
Like, all right, fuck.
Right.
Clayton's on one.
Not Clayton.
Yeah.
My first year cheerleading, I was 8 years old and I was so shy as a cheerleader. I wouldn't look up from the ground. I wouldn't smile or anything. I was very shy. And then the next year it was just like, I came out of my shell. She's a performer now.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so crazy to even think that there was a time when you're like, had stage fright.
Oh yeah.
Cause now, I mean, and we were talking about this before we start recording, but I was asking if you still love stand up as I think that's the challenge too of like finding ways to not only just keep it fresh for yourself, but still, I mean, you've been doing these massive theater tours now for a while, which I'm very jealous of. And I'm like, how could you not be awesome every time? But I'm sure just like any job, like you see these bands that are, I got some friends that are just getting going and some that have been doing it 30 years. And I just saw them at Red Rocks and they were, you know, a little like, yeah, it's, you know, it's cool. It's and I'm just like, you're doing Red Rocks again. Like this, and there's, but it's just kind of very 30 years of doing it. There's kind of like, it's a little of the lust has been taken away.
I would say I've found a new joy in stand-up.
Cool.
Almost in a way that I didn't have before. When I first started doing stand-up, I didn't want it. I didn't want to be a comedian. I was trying to be an actress, and I kind of fell into it. So it wasn't something that I was like chasing hardcore. When things took off for me, I enjoyed it and I had fun, but I felt like in the first like 5 years, I had this love-hate relationship with it because I wanted to be an actress, but I couldn't book anything.
Right.
Like, no, I wanted to be an actress. Nobody else wanted me to be an actress. Right. You know what I mean? Right. So it was like, okay, well, stand-up is working. Let me keep doing this then. And it wasn't until, I don't know, after that, after at least 5 years in, that I started really owning the fact that I was a comedian and enjoying it. But I would enjoy it with anxiety, you know, and with a lot of anxiety. But I feel like recently, this most recent tour, I've probably had the most fun that I've ever had doing stand-up. And I think it has a lot to do with taking a big long break of 2020.
Yeah.
Realigning, what do I want with my life? Where do I want to put my energy? You know, because in our industry, we can get caught up in that hustle, that grind of like everybody, okay, he's being a director, maybe I should be a director. Okay, this person's doing a podcast, maybe I should do a podcast. They have a YouTube channel, I should do a YouTube channel. And then we start like pouring ourselves into all these different things that may not be for you, but it's just, we see what other people are doing and we're like, oh, okay, maybe I should be doing that. And we start putting our energy, next thing you know, you're like depleted of energy. And the one thing or the few things that you're actually supposed to be giving yourself to, you only have minimal bits of yourself to give because you're wasting energy in all these other things that aren't for you. It's like you have this garden that everyone has their own garden of their own dreams, their own career and everything. And you start watering weeds that are not necessary. And you start watering this. So I feel like for me, 2020, when it was like taking my hands off the garden and not watering anything, letting all the weeds die, let everything in there die that was not meant to be for me. And whatever was left standing, I was like, okay, that's for me, that's for me, that's for me. That's what I'm going to pour myself into. That's what I really want. That's what really speaks to my heart. That's what really brings me joy to participate in.
Wow.
Too deep.
No, I just feel like we should end the podcast on that.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for being here. that takes a lot to get to a place to where you're, looking through that set of goggles and being confident enough to go, I'm going to just like chill out and take your foot off the gas, basically, which is what we're conditioned to do after a while. You're like, I want to work hard to get busy. And then my mom tells me all the time, she's like, did you sleep? Did you blah, blah? And I'm just like, I didn't work hard to get to a place now to where I'm busier to then slow down. Like, if anything, it's just more now. And I just hopefully get better at finding time to decompress or whatever and just take, you know, care of yourself. But
it's so important.
Which is a challenge, yeah. How do you do that? How do you self?
So what's crazy is before the pandemic, I had actually planned on taking a sabbatical for 2020. Whoa. So I had no dates on the books for 2020, where a lot of people had to cancel tours. Like, there was a lot of tours that were canceled, projects that were canceled. I had nothing on my books because I knew I needed to take a break because I was running on fumes.
Yeah.
I was creating still, but I was creating out of not joy, not because I'm a creative person. I was creating out of like survival mode.
Necessity, yeah.
Exactly. I'm creating because I'm trying to keep up with the Joneses. I'm instead of creating because I'm just a creative person. So I needed to really just stop and take a break, realign myself with God, with my own heart, what I wanted. I needed to pause.
Yeah.
And so I had planned to take a break. And in January of that year, 2020, January and February, I doubted that decision so hard.
Yeah.
I was like, oh no, what did I do? I messed up. It felt like I had taken myself out of the algorithm of life.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh no.
Whoa, that's terrifying.
Everybody's going to forget about me.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a whole year off there and be like, what happened to her? When I come back, everybody's going to be, there's somebody new.
Sorry,
there's
we got another Angela Johnson.
Exactly.
Sorry.
We moved on. they're going to forget about me. Like all this like doubt of like, you were a coward. That's why you took a break. Not because you needed it, just because you were a coward. Like, look at your friends. They're still hustling. Look at all this person. Like, look at Eliza. She's crushing it. I'm sure she's tired too. Look at Joe. He's tired too, but they're still crushing it. Like, you were just a coward. Like, I start really just going in on myself. And I was like, oh my gosh.
Do this just internally or do this in the mirror, like out loud?
I'm curious. Internally and to my husband as well. And just like crying and being like, what did I do? Yeah. Like, I thought I needed this break. Maybe I didn't. And trying to come to terms with that. And I remember in that time too, I was like, okay, well, I'll just make the best of it, whatever it is. And then next thing you know, COVID happened and everybody ended up taking a break. And it was my sabbatical year where I really just unplugged. I didn't try to create anything during that time.
That was my next question.
I didn't try to find a new outlet. I didn't try to be, let me do an online show. I was like, no, I am done.
Taking this time to truly chill, because that's what you felt like you were going to do anyway.
Yeah.
And now you have full jurisdiction to do that.
Yeah.
Wow. How was, I just had this conversation with somebody the other day about, and then we were just joking about how some people really, they feel bad because they're like, look, I know COVID was terrible, but like, I fucking thrived. As far as I think doing what we're talking about, which is like taking a step back and not feeling, taking the pressure off, because you're like, there's no reason for me to be giving myself a hard time. Mm-hmm. I should be cutting myself all the slack, because there's nothing up to a certain point. And then I think we all probably were like, all right, does it feel like things are starting to come back? Should I maybe do a few Zoom shows or find some clubs that are going, because things are going to come back and then it's just going to be, and I want to be somewhat prepared? Or should I truly just like, you know, relish in the fact that there's nothing to do? Yeah. Did you enjoy or hate that?
Enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Every bit of it.
Yeah, I know.
Like, minus what was happening in the world, because it was like people were dying left and right, and there's all of like Black Lives Matters, like all the things that was really starting to happen during that time. There were some really dark times, but for me personally, there was a lot of rest that was happening and rejuvenation. I mean, my husband and I started doing TikTok dance videos and just like being silly.
Did you guys like reconnect more? Did you find that?
Yeah, it was great. We were cooking and I never cook. Like, we're cooking recipes. I built a garden in my backyard. We started gardening. I was like, I was a hippie. I started doing meditation and like yoga every day. Like, oh, I was really
A routine.
I did, and I enjoyed it. I got to enjoy my house for the first time ever. I had been living there for 5 years, but I was on tour the whole time. So it was the first time I was like, I have a balcony? I should put furniture out here. I finally put furniture on my balcony that I would then use every night that I never, ever went on my balcony before.
What did you do on the balcony?
I did my meditation.
Look at the stars.
Look at the city. Look at the lights, everything. I had my glass of wine. Just relax. Just enjoy.
So that was my next question. I didn't know if you had cocktails from time to time and what your drink of choice. Okay. Yeah, you like to throw down. Yeah, I don't think we've truly partied like at a comedy club or I missed your, and I was really bummed about it, your, what's that big?
My birthday.
Yes.
Yes, my 40th epic. Birthday. Wow. It was amazing. I wish you could have been there. Me we too. Did a high school theme party where everybody had to dress like they dressed in high school. And we had a whole backdrop with like lockers, and it was like a high school dance. So it was like everybody was coming to a high school dance.
Oh my God.
It was incredible. It was so fun.
Yeah. Just the nostalgia factor was like very.
Oh yeah. And there was people who came like, you know, schoolgirls, jocks with their Letterman jackets, pulled out the storage, cholos, full on just like FUBU gear. Yeah. My husband and I came, Tommy Hilfiger out. Just like the baggy pants, just 90s, full on like 90s hip hop.
Yes.
It was great. It was fun.
And so you went for it. Like, I have a Uber or DD waiting in the wings.
Yeah. Actually, I didn't drink that night.
Because you're hosting.
Because I'm hosting. Oh, man. So
it is always a little weird when the host just gets fucked up.
Yeah. I did. I really enjoyed myself.
Unless it's your house. Because then you can slip out and dip out whenever you want.
Yeah, it wasn't my house. Yeah. We were at somebody else's house. Yeah. But I enjoyed like, being present in the moment. And I'm like, I'm 40. Like, this is big deal.
Yeah.
This is it. And I enjoyed.
You still look like you're in your 20s, by the way.
Thank you so much.
I don't know what you do.
Oh my God, thank you.
What's your skincare regime?
moisturizer. I'll give it to you.
For real?
Yeah. You, are you kidding me? Look at your skin. Not one wrinkle on your face.
Yeah, I don't know. Noxzema from time to time.
And I was asking you about your shaving.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You have a fresh, clean shave
right now. Fresh, clean shave. You said...
When? Why? What makes you decide, like, I'm going to shave today? What is it?
So the grays have started to pop through, but I'm fine with that.
As you should be. That's salt and pepper for men. It's sexy for men. Yeah, women, we are the ones who have to hide it.
Exactly. I don't know. I think it just, I literally will just wake up and look at myself in one way and just be like, it's gone. Don't like it. It's maybe, I don't know if it's first thing in the morning, because that's always just like a weird, like, sizing yourself up when you're half asleep and being like, oh, fucking, what's going on?
The worst time to make decisions.
Yeah, it really is. Half asleep, shaving half asleep is a big, big no-no. But yeah, just, I think kind of I was like, maybe I should just go under the neck and leave up top, but it grows so fast, it'll be back by Friday. A nice shadow will. Actually, by later tonight, actually.
Nice, same. No, I'm just kidding.
Nice, yeah, I was gonna say, what razor do you use? Is that, when you said you started watching the pimple popping things, I wanted to ask, like, when you were a kid, did you ever have, what was your thing maybe that, because I feel like all comedians had something that was, whether it was an insecurity or something that was like the focal point of maybe some teasing, or like, what was your thing? Was acne ever an issue, or was it being shy?
No, it wasn't acne. It was, I have big teeth and big feet.
You got teased for having big feet?
Big feet and big teeth, yes.
So both. Kids were like, there's a combo pack.
Because I have size 8 feet. I'm only 5'3", and I have size 8. So typically for like 5'6 range, right? So I'm 5'3", I have size 8 feet, but I've had size 8 feet since like sixth grade. So I've had big old feet forever, and I have big teeth. And I remember my mom used to try to comfort me about my big teeth, and she would be like, Julia Roberts has big teeth.
Great, yeah. Did that work?
I don't know, maybe. Yeah. But it's like, who's Julia Roberts?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, those types of things, kids also get crafty with their teasing. Like, there's no reason to be teased for having big teeth or big feet.
But they do it.
Kids just find the things to, like, cut to your core.
Yeah.
Remember, there's a kid, he used to make fun of me for being a fat kid, and he just wore really tight sweatpants, and so I would just call him tight pants. It fucking drove him crazy. I just said that his pants were a little too snug, and he couldn't handle it. But it was just like I don't know, maybe it was just calling out what was happening. Would you find yourself, with comebacks? Would you kind of...
So I wasn't real good at, like, comebacks, but I had a temper.
Okay.
I would say, I'm going to fight you, is what it was.
Gotcha.
I rarely would ever fight, but I would talk real tough.
Right.
Real, real tough game. But I was very athletic, and so I would...
You said tomboy.
Yes. I would race boys.
Oh, my God.
Like, if people tried to, like...
Not for, like, you have a crush on them because you're like,
no,
this is purely for the sport aspect.
Like, they're trying to make fun of me, or they're trying whatever. Be like, let's go race. Let's do that then.
Oh, my God. Let's sell it on the tracks. That's so fucking 90s, so, like, Latino
fast
movie of you. Right?
And I was so good. I was fast. I was, like, I would beat all the boys. Are you kidding me? Smoked. Just don't even. What are you thinking?
And by the way, you're taking a little bit of the man card from, because boys want to all be.
And I guess that was my comeback and not knowing it. Like, I didn't have the words to say, but I was like, let me beat you. Come on, we're here.
Yeah.
Come on.
That, like, taking them out of their element, I feel like, with that, does more damage, I feel like.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's like, you got beat by a girl when that was a fucking thing.
Right, right, right. And did you ever play, they called it different games at different schools, but we called it Socket or Foursquare.
Yeah, Sokum for us.
Okay, where you, like, there's a line in the middle and you
two
hit
sides.
The ball. Yes, and you could do, like, skimmers.
Yep.
Oh, man. I would crush the boys in that one.
For real?
Skimmers all day, bro.
Oh, man. That's so dope. Wait, so, so when you start to find that comedy is, like, going to be your thing, was there, like, a light bulb moment, or was it just, like, a collection of people being like, all right, this is, like you said, you were a class clown, right? Kind of, like, you were deemed that. So people around you started to kind of know, like, all right. And people kind of just assume, like, Angela's going to be doing something in entertainment. And how many people, I guess, come to you with the, I'm going to see you on this, I'm going to blah, 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 you're going to be the next blah, blah, to where it, like, starts to maybe, you know, set some off in your brain where you're like, oh, maybe I can do this, or I want to do this now more because people are starting to let me know that they think it's possible.
So the teacher that I talk about in my book, that was my senior year in high school. I didn't really have anybody before that be like, oh, you're going to be entertainment or anything like that. Because again, I was like trying to be a chola. I was trying to be tough. Like I wasn't trying to be an actress or a comedian. Yeah. I was just funny.
Yeah.
So that wasn't really like a thing that I could be.
Right.
In the back of my mind, I was like, I want to be an actress one day. But I would never say that out loud because I was ashamed. I was embarrassed, you know? But I wasn't like actively trying to go audition for this play or anything like that or join community theater. Never anything. My senior year, I went to the drama class. I wasn't even in the class. I just went and hung out, right? And then I kind of like joined them for a couple of their little games and exercises. And I remember the teacher being like, you should come try out for the play. And I was like, oh, but I have cheerleading practice. Like, I don't know if I could even do both. She's like, well, I didn't say you would book it. I was just saying you should come try out.
Whoa.
And I was like, oh, I'm good. I'm a cheerleader. I don't need this.
Yeah.
So I didn't like have this performer like, oh, she's going to be somebody. But like that teacher who was like, you're going to be on SNL one day. I wasn't even an acting class yet. I wasn't anything. So her saying that, I was like, oh, okay, that's funny. That's weird. And then the only other time is my grandma, before she passed away. I think I was maybe 19 or 18. I don't know. I was out of high school, but I hadn't done anything yet. And she used to watch her telenovelas, her Mexican game shows, where it's just like loud colors, noises.
Like, phenomenal.
Yeah. So she would watch those all the time. And she would be in her little rocking chair pulled up real close to the TV. And she would like lean forward and just like watch her shows. And I remember one day I walked into her room and she's watching her like game show. And I remember her turning to me and saying, I could see you doing that one day.
Whoa.
And I was just like, okay.
She meant like acting on one of the not like winning a dishwasher on a game
show.
Right.
Yeah. Like being on TV.
Wow.
And I remember being like, huh, okay. You know, like people could see it, but I wasn't actively trying to like be anything yet. And it wasn't until I was in junior college and I had a friend who I ran into and she was like, hey, guess what? I'm a cheerleader for the Oakland Raiders. You should come try out. And I was like, no, that's not really my jam. Like, I do competitive cheerleading with stunts and tumbling. Raiderettes was, like, pretty shake your pom-poms, do, like, turns and stuff. And I'm like, oh, that's not really my jam. Then I had another friend who she had moved from San Jose to L.A. And she was in the entertainment industry. She had been in, like, a Ross commercial and an NSYNC video. And I was like, oh, my God, I know somebody famous. This is crazy. And I remember talking to her being like, hey, I would want to do what you're doing one day. Like, she was, like, the only person that I actually told, like, hey, I kind of want to do what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she was like, well, if you ever move down here, I'll help you get started. And I'll help show you the ropes. And then it was like, huh, this is actually, like, a thing that I could pursue.
Yeah. Like, you need to know somebody that's kind of tied to it to make it feel possible.
Like, because other than that, it's just a fantasy in my brain. It's not a real dream to actually go for. It's just a fantasy.
Yep.
So at this point, then I'm like, you know what? I'm going to try out for the Oakland Raiders. And if I make the Raiderettes, I'm going to do it for 1 year. I'm going to use that as my sign to pursue the entertainment industry. And if I don't make the squad, then I won't do it. And I'll just find something else to do. So I tried out. Long story short, made the squad, went to the Super Bowl that year, came home from the Super Bowl the very next weekend, packed my bags, moved to LA, and I started from the ground up as an extra and just kind of worked my way up. So I still had no idea that I was like funny to be a comedian or anything like that. I was trying to be an actress. So I started as an extra. And on Friends. Best show. Are you kidding me?
That was a great part of the way you just set that up and broke that down was really that's an I think that's chapter 2 maybe of Who Do I Think I Am. Available now everywhere in bookstores and audio.
Yes.
Is there a favorite place you like to pimp people out to go get it or just wherever books are
sold? Wherever you like to get books.
Yeah.
It'll be there.
I highly recommend the audio version.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I worked really hard on that.
Hours, I'm assuming.
A lot of hours.
I have many questions about that. But wait, so tell me, the Friends extra thing was like your holy shit. Like,
man.
I'm on a set. You're on the biggest show, arguably, of all time.
Uh-huh.
And in its prime, right?
Yep. Seasons 9 and 10.
Wow.
So I moved to LA, and my friend, this is also from the book, but I'll give you just a recap story of it. My friend who was like, I'll help you get started. She kept her word, and she told me what to do and had me go sign up to be an extra at Central Casting. I don't know if, did you ever be an extra?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So you know
it's
how
it's a world and a half.
Oh, yeah.
Where there are legends.
Oh, yeah.
There are people that have been lifers.
Yeah.
That are just like, you think Julia Roberts has big teeth?
Yeah.
I used to work with, I don't know if you heard of Kate Blanchett. Like, and they're just like yeah, I was in Tombstone. And they were in these movies. They weren't just working on set. They were in, they speak like these guys. They know when the craft service, like the good cheese is coming out. Like they're fucking like, you know what I'm saying? They hold court.
That's a good cheese.
Kids go to them and they're just like, yeah, that's a fucking, it's why there was a Ricky Gervais show about those people. Because it's such a, some of them, you know, just come and go. And you're like, all right, this is just a gig. And then some just get stuck in it and they're like, I'm gonna be king of the castle in this world.
Yeah, it's a whole world.
It's a whole world.
So she sent me to the slaughter. She was like, go to Central Casting.
Cattle.
And go sign up. And there's gonna be a line of people out the door ready to sign up to be an extra, but I don't want you to wait in line. Just go to the front window, ask for a guy named Sam, give him your Raiderette headshot and a tray of cookies and tell him you're new to town and you wanna be an extra.
Give him a tray of cookies?
Yeah. Give him a tray of cookies. Like, real sleazy. This is the casting couch that I've been hearing about. You know what I mean? I'm like, what the hell? She's like, yeah, and make sure they're not funfetti. What the hell does funfetti mean? Does that mean, like, I'm down for anything? Definitely not getting no funfetti.
What is funfetti? Is it a type of cookie?
Yeah. Just with, like, the confetti.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
In it, you know?
I didn't know if it was, like, some sort of casting couch euphemism.
That's what I'm saying.
Cookie bribery is a real thing. In fourth grade, real quick, I ran for student council vice president, fifth grade, and the girl Caitlin Peck, who I ran against in our class, it was the primaries before we went to the all school, I handed out cookies as I was, Caitlin gave her speech, and I just go, well, that was a great speech, Caitlin, and we appreciate everything that you've put together.
You
and then
I opened
fucking Keebler Elves cookies, the M&M's one, and I walked around to everyone's desk, and I go, now, there's a lot going on this year. Enjoy your cookie. There's a lot going on this year that we all, and I just went around one cookie in front of each person, and my buddies were all laughing. I was doing it obviously as like a goof, but also as a clear like, oh, I'm fucking winning this thing.
Yeah.
And I won. And Caitlin threw a big fit and goes, you guys just voted for Adam just because he gave you cookies. And nobody really disputed that. But I didn't fucking care.
Yeah. Watch and learn, Caitlin.
Very Trumpy of me. did you like your cookie? And so, okay, so you gave out cookies and then you said, here's my headshot.
Yeah.
Wide eyed, were you just so pumped? You had that fucking new to town look, I'm sure.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Well, so here's the thing.
This is Matt LeBlanc?
Fresh off the Super Bowl. The Raiders were just in the Super Bowl.
Whoa.
So
you're coming from doing cool shit.
Oh, I was just off the Super Bowl, right? A few weeks ago was just the Super Bowl. So I go to this place, Central Casting. I knock on the window. I'm like, yeah, I'm here for Sam. She's like, okay, he'll be right out. And I have my sleazy cookies, like everybody knows. Like, I'm like whoring myself out with these cookies. Here comes this guy walking from the back office. He comes out and he's wearing a Raiders hat. And he's like, hey, I'm Sam. What's up? And I'm like, oh, this is for you. And I give him my Raiderette headshot. And he's like, Raiders? No way, you're a Raiderette. Oh my God. And he starts talking Super Bowl stuff. I'm like, yeah, I was just there. Like all the things. And he's like, all right, I'm gonna get you signed up, don't even worry about it. He calls me like 2 days later and he's like, hey, you want to be an extra on Friends? And I was like, on Friends? You mean like my favorite show of all time?
It is
current number one show on television. Yeah, I want to do that, thank you. And that was my first job, and still to this day probably my favorite job I've ever had.
No way.
Oh, by far.
That's right, guys. The NFL is back. Russell Wilson's coming back to Seattle. Will they boo? Will they cheer? Will they throw Sierra album covers at his dick? The NFL's opening week was action-packed. And guess what? Ooh, it's just getting started. Because tonight, Russ comes back to Seattle, like I said. Last night, yesterday, we had some big games, some big plays. Well, get ready for week two of touchdowns, sweet catches, dope throws, and even bigger wins with DraftKings Sportsbook.
I love DraftKings.
I know you do, Grandpa. It's the official sports betting partner of the NFL.
How does it work?
Well, I'll tell you. This week, new customers can bet just $5 on any football game and get $200 in free bets instantly.
How does that work?
Let me fucking tell you. Want more action?
Yes.
Everyone does. And you can experience the thrill of DraftKings early win promotion by hopping on board right now. This Sunday, bet on any NFL team to win. And if your team leads by 10 at any point during the game, Grandpa, you get paid instantly.
That fucking rules.
I know it does. Even if your team loses.
Hell yeah.
Here's what you do. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app right now and use the promo code ABOUT to get $200 in free bets. $200 in free bets instantly when you place a $5 bet on any football game. Get the DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Use promo code ABOUT only at DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the NFL. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. Hey guys, Adam Ray here for the About Last Night podcast, and I'm sitting down because I got some big news. Usually I'm standing up to do comedy, but I'm sitting down now because I got the deal of a lifetime. First of all, sitting is bad for you. We all know that, whether we're sitting on planes or sitting on a beanbag chair watching porn in front of our kids, there's just too much damage you do on the body. Thankfully, Axion has come up with a chair that allows your pelvis to move the way it does while you walk. So all 33 vertebrae align into perfect posture. The result? Better breathing, better blood flow, and relief from the pain. It's crazy what you can do when you set your body to do it. Now, these guys are homies of mine. My buddy Dennis worked with the Clippers as their doctor for 27 years. He runs a wellness center called Peak Wellness. He's a fucking gangster and has saved me from surgery numerous times. I actually met Justin Bieber at his place, and I was in my boxers getting cupping done, and Bieber and I locked eyes, and I was like, this is how we were supposed to meet, and Bieber smiled, and I never saw him again. This chair is a game changer. It's changed the way I live, it's changed the way I breathe, the way I sit, and you guys right now can get that chair for 25% off using the promo code ALN25 at all33.com. It's incredible. You got to get it. It's the only chair out there to get. We will be getting them for the studio. Go to all33.com and use promo code ALN25 for 25% off this chair.
I don't think people realize that, like, being on a set, how exciting it is, and especially a show where you're like, the energy. I mean, I went to one taping when I was in college, 2001 here in LA, and I don't remember what season that was, 2001. I think shortly towards the end as well, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if it was your episode. And so the energy in that studio was crazy. Even the audience warm-up guy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we were there for probably 5.5 hours.
Yeah.
And by the end, it was like, how many more fucking dance competitions can we see between two MILFs from Rancho Cucamonga? And like, how many more granola bars can we fucking eat? But everybody was like, nobody was bummed about it.
No.
Because like Jennifer Aniston would slip up and we get to see some bloopers, or like Joey would, like, you know, pull somebody out of the crowd and do a how you doing, and everyone would freak out.
Yeah.
And like, there's truly probably a handful of shows that have that type of energy.
What a blessing that I got to be a part of this show.
And you fed off it.
Oh my God.
It got you so inspired?
So as soon as I walk, I remember my first day driving there to the set. You drive and you park across the street. You don't even get to park in the lot. You got to park across the street in that lot over there. And then I remember walking through Warner Brothers lot and just kind of dreaming. And I think that's what makes it one of my favorite jobs, is I wasn't jaded yet. And I was like, anything's possible. I was such a dreamer. So I'd be walking through Warner Brothers lot, just looking and being like, oh my gosh, like, here's a soundstage for this show, for that show. And like, the tour trams would drive by me and I'd be like, oh, I wonder if they think I'm somebody. I wonder if they think I'm like somebody successful or famous. And then getting to the actual soundstage and walking on the set, the smell of a soundstage is very specific and it's very nostalgic for me. If I smell the set of a soundstage, it's just something about it is very magical. And I remember walking onto the set and seeing the boys' apartment, seeing the coffee shop, seeing the girls' apartment, and being like, wow, this, I can't believe I'm actually here making movie magic for TV. Like, this is crazy. And it was an incredible experience. And I got my SAG card and I made friends with the second AD on the show. He was very funny. I was funny. We just kept making each other laugh. And he's like, hey, I'm gonna bring you back tomorrow. Okay, I'm gonna bring you back next week. Okay, I'll bring you back next week. And then next thing you know, I was there for season 9 and 10.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Holy shit. Did you get to meet, did anybody give you any advice while you were there? Did you get to like pick anybody's brain?
No advice, no. But I definitely got to converse with the cast, but I would never start a conversation.
Yeah.
I would only speak when spoken to.
Gotcha.
That kind of thing.
That's kind of your
approach. That was my rule. Yeah. And I was just like, if they say something to me, I will reply back. Don't overdo it. And you would see people try to talk to the cast and then immediately AD's like, nope, move her over there. I was like, no, I'm never going to be that one. And I think the reason why the cast would talk to me every now and then is because they knew I wasn't hungry for it. I wasn't trying to get their attention.
Yeah.
And so I was a safe person to interact with because I wouldn't try to talk their ear off afterwards.
They can almost confide in you.
I don't know about confiding me, but they'd be...
Maybe like, this guy won't shut the fuck about working with Julia Roberts.
This guy, right?
I don't know. Do you kind of have that approach with like fans now? Is it like, do you kind of... Or are your fans so rabid that it's... Rabid's the right word, right? Rampant? Rabid. What's the word?
I think it's rabid.
Rabid, right?
I think.
Like enthused, overly like...
I think it's rabid.
We get a fact check on this?
Because rampant is not that.
Yeah. Nice. We'll edit this out. What say it again? It is rabid, right?
Crazy.
Yeah. Do your fans seem like the fucking diehard, right?
I have really great fans.
Yeah.
But they're not
but they can
wild.
Read the room. Yeah. So they're not like showing
for the
like,
most part, yes.
Showing up to your house with like cookie baskets.
Oh, thank God. Yeah. No. They can read the room for the most part. Every now and then you have a few that you're like, hey. Let's somebody help me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Every now and then.
Because you do meet and greets.
Oh my God, at my show this weekend, never happened. Dead. This will happen.
Please.
I'm on stage in the middle of my set. This lady walks right up to the front, pulls her phone out to take a selfie with me during my set and just takes a selfie. And I'm like, are you kidding me? And then she turns into a video and she goes, say hi. Hi, say hi during my set at a big, huge theater at the Grove of Anaheim.
Holy shit.
I was.
Now, does that just make you irate or do you respect the moxie to do that? Is it like a little of both? No. It's like,
I am livid inside.
Psycho, yeah.
However, I know the second I show that I'm livid,
yeah.
I just lost the whole room.
Yeah. You gotta use it. Include the distraction to squash it, right?
Oh, so now I'm trying to think of like, how can I handle the situation, keep it lighthearted, but let it be serious. And so I go, oh, here, give me your phone. I'll take the picture. And I take her phone and I just hand it to a security guard. And I go, she'll give it to you after the show unless they don't kick you out and whatever. And it was a whole thing. But then I was so livid. I was like, how do I come back from this? Like, what do I do to like, get a laugh. I can't just move on to my joke. I have to acknowledge this. And which you're so good at crowd work. You're so good at improvising. You're so good at like all the things that like happen in the moment. And you have something so quick. For me, I'm like I said, words are not my strength. Like I can't go race the lady outside right now. You know what I mean? Let's take it to the track,
right,
woman.
Right.
So I'm like, okay,
you should, though.
Here, what am I going to say? And I made fun of a guy that I made fun of earlier, and I was like, I would expect that from him, but not from her. And then it was just a real quick laugh that everybody got what I was saying, and then I just moved on from there because I was like, I don't trust myself to keep going because I don't know if I'm just going to get angry hearing myself talk about what this woman did. Let me just move on.
Wow. Fucking people. But I guess that's par for the course, right? You create this empire that you have created.
Who does that, though? The entitlement.
Yeah.
Well, in the middle of a show.
There'll be no shortage of people that think that, you know, that the night should be... Like, they want their moment, too. She wanted her moment with you, and she fucking got it.
Ugh.
Who was on the receiving end of that phone that she was FaceTiming?
She was taking a video.
Oh, she was taking a video.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Awful.
But so, for the most part, you avoid these types of occurrences at your shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean...
People just come out to laugh.
People come out to have a good time. I get that compliment a lot from clubs and venues. Like, you have really great fans. Like, they come out, they drink, and they have a good time. Like, they don't get wasted. They don't, like, they're not super rowdy. Like, they're just coming to have a good time. So, I'm very lucky. I have a good crowd.
How has the book been received by your friends, fans, and all that?
Great. Yeah. I had a couple people, one girl in particular, who... I haven't talked to her in years, but she messaged me about this one part in my book. She's like, hey, are you talking about me in this chapter?
Oh, shit. Were you?
I was not. Whoa. However, when she brought it up, okay, I have to tell you the story now.
Yeah, because so, you do these deep dives. I mean, this is
this is what writing a book is. If you're going to do it and it's going to be, who do you think I am? Right. That's the title again.
Right. Who do I think I am?
Who do I think I am?
Uh-huh.
I mean, you're laying out, this is how I got to where I am. Yeah. So you're going to be hitting some highlights and featuring some, you know, some guest stars from the show called Angela's Life.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. So a lot of people get mentioned, some by real name, some by not.
Yeah.
And this one particular situation, I was living with my cousin Joe, and I had a friend come visit me, but she stayed in his room all weekend. So I was like, oh, I guess she came to visit him because he was a little hoe. Joe was a hoe. And he would hook up with everybody. Anytime I had a friend, he'd try and hook up with them. So,
oh my God, what you just reminded me with that voice real quick was the voice of your, which is one of my favorite Curb Your Enthusiasm episodes of all time, your episode. Oh. You come out eating popcorn. And Larry's trying to hook up with the with your
my aunt.
Your
yeah.
aunt.
Yeah.
And you're coming out and and you're eating popcorn, and then Larry's just like, hey, what are you doing? We're making out. You're like, didn't really sound like it.
Yeah.
Like you're there's a lot of talking. Yeah. And then you walked away and you're like, all right, have fun talking. Bye. You were so great.
Thank you.
It was before I knew you, and I was like, whoa, what? You just came in and crushed.
Thank you.
In that show. Just in and out, boom, got laughs, funny. And it was like, thanks. I was like, oh, I could see that character popping up in the show again.
Thank
anyway, keep
you.
Going.
They just did not me see that character.
Yeah.
On the show.
Yeah, that's okay. One and done.
Yeah. What was I talking about?
Oh, the Joe the hoe.
Oh yeah. So my cousin Joe, he'd be hooking up with all my friends. Yeah. And so this one girl came, and I mentioned, but she stayed with my cousin the whole time. Blah blah blah. So I guess she came to visit him and not me. Whatever. And so she's like, "Were you talking about me?" And I actually wasn't. I was talking about a different girl.
Okay.
And but when she started, she's like giving me her side of the story. She's like, he asked me to stay in his room. This is like 20 over, this is about 20 years now. He asked me to stay in his room, blah, 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 and giving me like her spiel. And I was like, I'm not even talking about you. Like, Joe did that a lot, okay? But then I call my cousin Joe and I'm like, I feel like my memory is playing tricks on me. Am I talking about her? Like, I couldn't remember all my stories. And he was like, oh, no, I never hooked up with her. You know, I was like, okay, thank God. Whew, definitely not talking about her.
Oh my God.
But yeah, so I would get like, you know, phone calls like that. Are you talking about me? Or like, hey, when you mentioned this, like, who did you mean in that? And I'm like, oop.
Yeah. I guess you do have to consider that if you're going to.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I wrote a chapter about my dad and I sent him the chapter before I published it.
Whoa, how come?
Because I'm very honest in it and just talking about a lot of trauma that I experienced growing up. And I wanted him to read it because if he was not okay with it, I wouldn't have published it. I didn't need to get it out that bad. It was not like...
It was imperative to the story.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, it's helpful and I've gotten a lot of messages from people thanking me for sharing those parts and them feeling seen in my story and whatnot. But I definitely sent it to him. And I did the therapy sandwich, you know, the positive, negative, positive.
Yeah.
I was like, Dad, I'm so glad you're my dad. Like, thank you so much for all you've done for me. There was some traumatic things, blah, blah, blah. But I am who I am today because of you. Thank you so much. And here's my chapter. And then he never responded to my chapter. He never replied to me or anything. He just kind of like made a joke about it. And I heard about the joke via somebody else. Like it was his way of saying that he's okay with it, I guess, like by just making a joke and saying it to my aunt to tell me, right? And I'm like, okay, well, he's fine with it, so I'm going to publish it. And then my book came out and my dad didn't even acknowledge it. I didn't get any phone call, any text, like, hey, congrats, you're an author, you wrote a book, nothing, which is what I talk about in the chapter, you know, just all of our relationship and the lack of all kinds of stuff.
Did that, wow. So that's in the later chapters, yeah?
Yeah,
that
yeah.
I haven't gotten to yet. Is that tough to know? First of all, what compels you to write a book? How much life do you think anyone needs to live before they should feel like that a book is the next move?
Anybody can
yeah.
write a book if you have a story to tell.
Gotcha.
So
did you hit a point where you were like, all right, there's enough going on? Or like, did somebody come to you and kind of go, hey, I know you pretty well. I know there's a lot of things that people could probably benefit from hearing from someone who's, you know, created quite a life for themselves.
When I first started doing stand-up, I would also sometimes speak at like women's conferences and girls' conferences and just share my story with them. And at this point, I haven't really done a whole lot I'm a touring comedian, but I'm not like an A-list actor or anything like that, right? But I would speak at girls' conferences, women's conferences, and I would share my story of how I grew up and how I got to where I am today. And people would be very inspired by the story. And so I would clock it and say, okay, one day I'm going to write this in a book. I'll write a book one day. And so I started a document on my computer about 10 years ago. And I was like, okay, if I wrote a book, these are stories I would tell. These are chapters I would have. And I started writing this like 10 years ago. And you know, in stand-up, we got to cut the fat. You want to get your punchline quick, right? Take out some details, get your punchline. But I had some stories that every detail was worth it and helped paint the picture of right. where I was.
Right.
And I would try it on stage and it wouldn't work on stage. And I'd be like, you know what? I'm going to save this for a book one day. Mm. It doesn't work on stage.
Some stories are just not for...
They're conversational and they're not like, you know, you got to get your punchlines in. Mm. Like, but some of them are not, I got to take you on a journey. This one's emotional. I'm going to take you here and then you're going to cry and then you're going to laugh and right. all of that.
Now, did you have a thought that was like, oh, maybe one woman show? Like,
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I have thought about that. And I remember seeing Mike Tyson's one man show.
This shit was great.
On Broadway. It was fantastic. And I, after seeing his one man show, I was like, I would love to do that one day. And I mean, John Leguizamo as well. Fantastic. But something about watching Mike Tyson, I guess it was like, if he could do it, I could do it.
Fuck yeah. Did he talk about biting the ear? Was there a point when he was like, oh, I remember tasting the ear. And I was like, this is probably this was a bad idea. I should have just talked to him about how I felt about it. Yeah. Was his performing great? Was he just like...
He was very entertaining.
Wow, engaging as shit, huh?
Yeah, he was entertaining.
Yeah. Good for him.
And heartfelt. It was real.
Wow.
And I think that's what really inspired me is because I know I'm more than just funny, but I'm actually a very deep person.
Yeah.
And I love to have real conversations with people. Anytime I have like a schmoozy surface level conversation because you're networking, you're at an event, I can't. I can only last a few minutes and I'm like, I don't know how to do this. Like I can only have like real deep conversations or none. But so anyways, I remember seeing him and there were like heartfelt moments and I'm like, I have heartfelt moments that I want to share on stage, but I can't because I do stand-up comedy where I'm supposed to make people laugh, not cry. But if I did a one-man show, then I could do all of those things. So I definitely thought about it, but the book was the first step. So I shared all those stories in my book, and I started writing this document 10 years ago, and it was during 2020 COVID. So I guess that is the one thing that I did start working on was my book in COVID. And my agent called me and was like, hey, I think it's time for you to write a book. And it just kind of felt right in my spirit. And I was like, yeah, I think now's the time to tell my story. So let's start working on that.
The title, where does that come from?
Who Do I Think I Am is stories of self-identity, growing up Mexican and American, but I didn't speak Spanish. I wanted to be a chola real bad, but nobody was scared of Little Payasa Johnson, so that didn't have the same ring to it. And then Who Do I Think I Am is also who do I think I am to dream such big dreams and go for them. So it's also stories of me chasing my dreams and how I got to where I am today.
Yeah, it's. I think we all do a pretty good job of not looking back and just kind of, especially in this business, right? And probably in all aspects of any job in life where just people are so, all right, what's next? I'm looking ahead. All right, I did that. And then you get to a point, I'm sure you can attest to this as well, where you've kind of created certain expectations for yourself and you're like, all right, well, of course I did that. Yeah, because I told myself I was going to do that. Or I've done a handful of things in that similar world that wasn't that big of a deal, like shooting a special. I just did a special, so of course I'm gonna do another one, and there's people that are gonna want it,
right?
But you know, to actually go, oh wow, I still fucking went out, built a whole new hour, had people dig it, had people come out and see it, and now people want to buy it and put it on, like, you know, to skip over those just the process along the way, and to not, like, I think we don't take enough time to truly like go, oh wow, I started from here and now I'm here.
Yeah.
I mean, when I saw Seinfeld's comedian documentary, I think in like maybe 1999 or something, that was the first time I was like, oh, he goes to comedy clubs? Like I just assumed he did Seinfeld and then was like a big, or didn't even really stop to think about how he got to where he was. But it's like, oh yeah, even that, I watched this Pixar documentary a little while ago and it was like, oh yeah, I just assumed like somebody came in with a fucking toy and was like, Tom Hanks is gonna do this. And they're like, fucking make 10 of them. But it was like, no, the Pixar studio, like the whole creation of that was like, started from scratch and had a lot of ups and downs. And it's just bonkers to
to really, and I'm sure that was kind of crazy to really sit down and go, right? Did you ever get like overwhelmed with like
all the time? Yeah. All the time. I think it's really important to pause and reflect on your life and what you've accomplished, whether it was an actual goal you set out to accomplish or was just an added blessing that you had no idea this was going to be a part of your life's journey, but it is. I think it's really important to pause and look back because it inspires you for the future. You remind yourself when you start doubting yourself, your creativity, you start comparing yourself to your peers, you start comparing yourself to whatever you see online, on social media, while you're scrolling, like whatever it is. And why am I not there yet? Shouldn't I be there by now? Shouldn't I do this? Like when you start getting in that mode, it's easy to start doubting that you will continue progressing. It's easy to start doubting that there's more for you. You can start thinking like, oh, maybe this is it. This is where I plateau. This is the end for me. Maybe this is it. Maybe it's just kind of like mediocre from here. Maybe it's, you can start getting into those things, right? But then when you pause and you look back at all the things that you've accomplished, at from selling out a show to booking an audition that you actually auditioned for to getting an offer for one, like all the different things that you have done in your career, the people that you've worked with, having your podcast, like moving from the house to the studio, like little things, but they're not little things, they're progression, they're part of your story. And when we start doubting ourselves, we start talking to ourselves the way those trolls are talking to us on TikTok, you know, then that's when it's time to pause and be like, hold on, let me just look back at the amazing journey that I have been on and remind myself that I am talented. I'm a beast. I have so much more to offer. I didn't know I was going to come up with this Bonkwikwi character, but it did. And then it blew up. I didn't know I was going to write this nail salon joke in a joke writing class at a church, but I did. Wow. And it blew up. Had no idea that was going to happen. So I have no idea what tomorrow holds, what a few months from now holds, what next year is going to look like. I can have goals, but I have no idea what's in store. I just have to believe it's going to be amazing. Why wouldn't I? Look at the past.
Is that in the book, All the Bonkwikwi? Yeah. Is that a whole chat?
Yeah.
And I know you've told that versions of that story, but that I assume that was going to be in there because I feel like that's a pretty instrumental time in your life.
Crazy.
You did it on the Mad TV reboot that we
Yeah.
How was that for you to do? There it is. Said it all by not saying anything.
A little nerve-wracking, a little like it had been a lot of years. So I was excited that the character had been received so well.
Yeah.
But a lot of time had gone by already. And it's not like I was like, for instance, Stuart, who had a bunch of sketches to go back to. Oh, I love the one sketch of Stuart when he did this. Oh, I love the one when Stuart did this. Right. I had one sketch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like people love it, but I wasn't like really like interwoven into the show, into the fabric of Mad TV, because at that point I was interwoven into the fabric of YouTube. YouTube is what popped it off. So people didn't even know it was a Mad TV sketch at first. They were just like, oh, this is funny.
Yeah.
So I wish like I had like a tighter relationship with all the people involved. But I was on the show for 4 episodes.
Wow.
That's it.
You wrote the Bonkwikwi sketch?
Yeah.
And it got on right away?
Yeah, so it was right when the writer's strike was happening. And so all the writers like pumping out scripts for like all the actors that they know how to write for. I was brand new to the show. So I was playing like detective number one in this sketch. And I would have like a line.
You gotta earn your stripes when you're new on the show,
exactly.
Right? Yeah.
So they were very generous and they let us write our own stuff. And so I wrote this Bonkwikwi sketch and we read it at the round table. Yeah, so Bonkwikwi is a mix of a lot of people I've met throughout my life, but two people in particular. One is the girl I went through a Burger King drive-thru in Memphis, Tennessee years ago, and she changed my life. And then the main influence of Bonquiqui is my brother, who at the time was not sober. So he had no filter. He would say whatever he wanted. And it was usually what people were thinking, but would never say out loud. He was that guy. He would say it.
Ahead of his time.
Oh, and he would say it in a funny way.
Cool.
Oh, he's making people laugh. Oh, he's hilarious. Yeah. And he's a trendsetter. Like, he starts laughing a certain way, then all of his friend circle starts laughing the way he laughs.
Whoa.
He is Bonquiqui. Like, that's who she is. She comes up with a new catchphrase, security or whatever, bye, whatever she does. That's my brother. My brother was that guy. He would come up with a catchphrase and everyone would do it. He started this thing where he would just laugh and everyone would do his laugh, but it was like a sarcastic little, like, if you were saying something, he'd go,
oh, man.
And then all his coworkers, everybody is like, they'd see each other and go, mm-hmm. And it's just a thing. He would just start doing a thing and then everybody does a thing.
People love to just, like, I don't know, imitate. Like, it's a form of flattery, but it's like, it's a fun, like, especially if it's a underground, like, you know, grassroots cult type thing, to be like, this is a funny thing that we all do and we're the only ones that do it.
Yeah.
Because we know the person that does it. Whoa. So, I mean, write what you know is what they say, right?
Right.
And so you truly were just... So once you start to kind of put pen to pad, you were like, oh, I just fucking just need to think and remember things he said. And
everything he would say,
him.
I would put into her mouth.
Wow.
Period. So, like, I created the character, but it's really my brother. He is the character.
Sketched as well.
And so I wrote the sketch, and we do it at the table read. Yeah. And there's, like, a whole binder of sketches. And we're reading through all of them. And you cast them. So you're like, hey, can you read this part? And can you read this part? And you read this part? Okay, great. And so you cast them. So we're all sitting around the table, and we're reading the parts that we're cast for at the table read. And from that, they pick which sketch is going to go into the episode. And so they picked my sketch to go into the next episode. And I was like, oh my gosh. And that was, like, the one sketch that I got to do. And then the writer's strike came and I was done. There was budget cuts. And by budget cuts, I mean me. I was done with the show.
Wow. But then you were like, I'm going to still do this character. This was fun.
So that was my husband's idea, because my husband's in music.
Mm.
And in the sketch, Bonquiqui does a rap song on the microphone to put the orders in to the back kitchen at King Burger. And so she did, on a mic is the queen, I listen to me sing. And so people would come to my shows and they would want me to do that song, or they would do the song, or they have shirts that have the song lyrics on it.
What the fuck?
So people love the song. And so my husband is like, we should write a real song for you to do and film a music video and put it on YouTube. And so that's what we did. And it did well. So we're like, let's do a few more songs. So we did three songs, and then he pitched it to his record label and then they bought it. And so Bonquiqui got signed to Warner Music and we did a full album.
That's right.
So we did a full album as Bonquiqui. We toured as Bonquiqui for two tours.
Yes.
It was incredible. We were out there
more fun
with
than stand up.
It was
different.
Completely different. I got to do both, though, because I started the show as myself, as Angela, and I would do, like, 10 minutes, 15 minutes
Brilliant.
Of the hitter jokes. The nail salon, obviously, the Raiderette joke, like, a bunch of jokes that people love, like, the greatest
the hits,
right?
Wait, was it advertised that they were going to get you, too, or was it?
So it was Bonquiqui. It's Angela Johnson Presents Bonquiqui,
gotcha.
Live in concert, but people don't read what they're buying. And so a lot of people thought they were coming just to a stand-up show and they had no idea it was a music show.
Oh, whoa.
So there was a lot of confusion that we had dealt with on the tour. And I'm sure there was a lot of people disappointed. Like, I thought we were coming to a stand-up show. Like, what is this? Hip-hop music, whatever it is. So I started, I did my 15 minutes of my stand-up, and then I would go backstage and I would get into my wardrobe, my hair and makeup and, like, all of that.
Mm.
And then Mal Hall would come out and
he
would
Mal.
Do like 10-15 minute set.
That's all we need.
And then
no, that's all we need from you.
Yeah. Keep thank going. You.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And then my husband and his band would come on stage, and my husband would do like three songs, some covers, getting them in the mood for music, right? And then my husband would exit the stage, the band would stay on the stage, and then I would enter. And then the rest of the show was me doing my music from my album that I had put out.
Pyrotechnics, are you coming out to a
big Oh my God, we had LED walls, like lighting rigs, confetti cannons, like it was nuts.
Shit.
It was nuts.
Holy shit. That is, every comedian wants to be a rock star.
Right. And they say every rock star wants to be a comedian.
Yeah. So you got to do both.
What a blessing.
Yeah, fucking crazy.
Unreal.
All right, so there's a chapter on that in the book as well, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the book again, Who Do I Think I Am? Stories of a...
Chola Wishes and Caviar Dreams.
What does caviar dreams mean?
It's like dreaming of
big fancy shit, yeah. A better life, a different
yeah.
life. Yeah, yeah, for sure. We're going to close this out with a little Inside the Actor Studio questionnaire. R.I.P. Yeah. James Lipton. You no doubt would have been on the show at some point. So we're going to get to know Angela Johnson with 10 questions that James closed the show out with. And I'll play James. Here we go. I'm here with Angela Johnson. Angela, what is your favorite word?
Hey, wait. I wasn't ready.
There's no wrong answer.
My favorite word... Hi.
Yes.
I say that a lot.
My nieces say that a lot too. They're 13.
Yeah.
It's
there I am.
It's endearing. What is your least favorite word?
My least favorite word, it used to be the F word, but then I started saying it and I was like, oh, actually it feels good.
What happened? You were against it?
It was ugly to me. Yeah. It was such an ugly word. I'm like, ugh, that's so ugly. But then I started saying it. I was like, oh, but it do feel good, though.
It do feel good. It's nice. When said in the right pairing of other words.
And it's not too aggressive.
No.
It's just like the right kind of...
So do you prefer a... You don't curse in your act, no?
No. Clean show.
Yeah.
Clean show.
But you probably enjoy the... like.
Oh, offline. Offline.
Something happens and you're like, fuck.
Oh, I wish I could just, like when the woman came up to me in my show, yeah. I wish I could just pop off. Oof.
Do you know the whole place knowing that you don't curse if you had
would That's what I'm saying.
Blown the roof off?
Oh.
You don't save a couple of those for a rainy day?
Oh
Keep
my God.
A couple of F-bombs locked and loaded in your back pocket?
I have yet to do it on stage. I have yet.
Wow.
15 years now, I have yet to do it on stage, but.
Trying to keep the streak going?
I'm trying to.
Save one show. Maybe it's like your last show, or I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
if I'm going to retire,
yeah, there we
be
go.
Like, listen.
Just call it the Fuck It All Tour.
Yeah.
with a PH. All right. what turns you on?
Ooh.
And some people go, you know,
pimple more than. Pimple popping video.
Perfect answer. Now, is there a pimple popping video that could gross you out? Like, could you see one?
Oh, yeah. There's ones that I don't like. The ones that are real watery.
You still
watery.
Watch them, though. Oh, yeah. Like those.
I don't like the real watery ones.
I just saw one of a guy. It had like a, not pus, but it was, it was like all water
cyst.
On the top of his foot.
I don't like that. I don't like the watery ones. I need some good consistency. Like, give me like
something
some
clean.
Thickness.
Yeah.
Like where, like you can like feel the pressure of it, like pushing out like that. I like that. Don't give me the liquid that just. Squirts out.
And does it need
like
to be like on a foot or a back? Like, can you, like, you know, when you see a guy in Dr. Pimple Popper walk
like
on the forehead and he's like, I got this on my foot. It's been there for about 20 years.
I like the one when it's like a bunch of little blackheads.
Gotcha.
I like that.
That's manageable.
Yeah.
What turns you off?
Arguing with my husband.
Yeah. How do you guys get through it? Trying to figure that out.
How much more time do you have?
Please.
Couples
therapy? No?
Yes, couples therapy
have to,
for sure. Learning each other's communication styles and love languages.
Yeah, that's real.
That really helped us. Oof. Because my husband, he's like, and you could do all kinds of different personality tests. So if you did the Enneagram one, he's an 8 on the Enneagram, which means he's a challenger. He likes to debate. Like he thrives off of, let's debate. Like, let's do that. I shut down.
Yeah.
Right? And he gets really passionate and like he's Puerto Rican, so he's loud by nature. Like he doesn't have a whisper tone. Like he's just, when he's on the phone, I can't also be on the phone because then people think he's talking to them on my call.
He's
a loud person and he gets passionate. And so to me, that's aggression, reminds me of my dad. And then now I'm back in my childhood and I'm like, okay, so now, now it's fight or flight. And like I said, not good with words. So then next thing you know, we're in a big fight. So we had to learn our communicating styles. I'm a 9, so I'm a peacemaker, not confrontational, and I shut down.
Yeah.
So that took us a while to learn. When he gets big, I shut down. Because when I would shut down, that would make him more upset because he'd be like, oh, see, you don't even care about this conversation. See how you're shutting down? You don't even care about this conversation. And I'm like, I literally cannot even process this conversation right now. So we had to learn our different styles and kind of like meet in the way, in the middle, you know, and be like, okay, you're getting a little, your volume's too loud. He's like, I'm not yelling. I understand that, but your volume's just too loud for me, man, right now. Yeah. Like, I need you to bring it.
Oh, God, yeah. Do you do that too?
Right here.
Yikes, yeah. A lot of hand gestures, yeah, yeah. But a quick way to set off any man. Any sort of, if you're like, to hear, like, yeah, oh, man. Isn't it, even just doing that as a bit right now got me charged up. And it wasn't even for me. Is there, isn't it crazy that you can get so heated in a fight to think like, we're never coming back from this, and then you do?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, everyone goes through that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, truly bonkers to me that it's like, at some point, and it's just about figuring out, like you said, like, the love language and how to, like, you know, we had this fight once, and it was just like, I was like, in my experience, like, I just need to, like, let's just stop right now for a little bit and just, like, truly just stop. Like, I'm going to, you know, leave you know, let's just be and, like, simmer down. I think that's the move. I feel like that's the only move right now.
Mm-hmm. And otherwise, you end up on Snapped.
Yeah. Oh, my God. He didn't compliment my bolognese, so I chopped his penis off while he was sleeping. You're like, that's the third time I've seen this episode, but it's a different set of circumstances. Yeah. What the fuck? Snapped is another show that's very addicting. Do you like those crime shows?
Are you kidding me?
Wow, part two.
Love language, crime shows.
Whoa.
Whether it's network procedural drama or docu-style, like Forensic Files, First 48, like that's my jam.
So do you ever like lean over to him if you see a certain episode where it's like, and then, you know, and that's, she just had enough and got rid of his body in the same night that they went and had Mexican food. And do you ever look at him and just be like, see, fucking, this is why you gotta like, do you ever just give a look? Like, this is like this, you know?
I feel like he just knows.
He knows, yeah.
Like, he's aware. Sometimes, he doesn't like the crime shows, but sometimes he'll put it on for me.
Oh.
And he'll be like, hey, babe, want to, like, watch one of your crime shows?
Whoa,
something?
Cool.
And I feel like he's trying to, like, study, too, to know what I know.
For sure. He doesn't want to get caught watching it on his
right,
own.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. That's so funny. Wow. I feel like you and a crime... I just started watching Only Murders in the Building.
I just finished the finale. What are you, season one or season two?
Season one, probably like 3-4 episodes deep.
I just finished season two finale. Incredible.
It's,
love that show.
Might be getting me into that. Like, look, the Gabby Petito stuff, I couldn't turn away from. That stuff is fascinating to me. Also, just, I mean, the amount of laziness on so many authorities' parts to actually figure that out still is crazy. But what is it about you gals that have such a fascination about it? About the whole crime world, the podcast, the shows, the murder, like the docs, the forensic stuff, like just...
I don't know exactly, but one thing that I can think of is there's like a bad thing happening, a bad guy being caught.
Gotcha.
Like, it's the vindication. It's like this horrible thing happened. Because when they don't catch it, I hate that episode. Like, when he's not caught, I hate that episode. When he actually doesn't get convicted on Law & Order SVU, I'm like, I hate this episode. So stupid. But it's when he did a bad thing and he got caught and he got persecuted. He is just in prison for the next 37 years. And I'm like, okay, God, I feel good.
Okay, so if you know there's like a happy ending like that.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. What is your favorite curse word?
I guess the F word. We just discussed that.
You're not even gonna give me one, huh?
Okay.
You don't have to.
Do you want it with aggression or like? What's the recipe for this one? Like, is it just?
I mean, let's put you in a situation.
Because now I feel like we're in the Whitney Cummings, Miranda. Her name that clip went viral? Oh, what's your favorite curse word? And she said the F word. I can't do it.
No.
I'm not gonna do it because now gonna be like we're doing her episode.
Okay, great. But you did say you like a good to yourself, frustrated.
Effort,
you're in line maybe at a coffee shop. Someone's taking too long.
You got
somewhere to be. We do it to yourself or in your head?
To myself.
Yeah.
Usually.
Yeah.
To myself. But one that I would say, I mean, shit is a good one that is just all the time.
Yep. Okay, good.
In my mouth.
Love that. Right. It's a great one.
Yeah, I like that
Perfect.
One.
Perfect. Okay. What sound or noise do you love?
What sound of noise?
Sound or noise do you
love? Oh, okay. What sound or noise do I love? My sleep sound. I listen to sleep sound every night to go to sleep. And I can't listen to the waves
Oof.
Or a thunderstorm, like, because I need it to be the same repetition over and over. You can't mix it up. With the waves, sometimes it's a crashing wave, sometimes it's not a crashing wave, and like that, now I'm gonna wake up because it wasn't a rhythm. So I have to listen to like a blanket sound of rain, like it's just the same shh, and it doesn't change
the whole night. Yeah,
whole time. Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Or the fan. I listen to a fan noise. I have fan on my app.
Yes.
And it's just box fan.
You couldn't hear like the murmuring of like detectives solving a crime like no. late night?
No. I don't like to fall asleep to TV.
Yeah. What sound or noise do you hate?
My husband's eating yeah. noises.
Women hate that. Fuck the chomping, I know. I'm already stuck. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Gotta control that, fellas.
I'm like, bruh.
Yeah, figure it out. You've been eating for 20 to 30 years.
Yeah.
Time to figure out how to chew properly and in public.
Thank you.
Yeah. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Massage therapist.
What profession would you not like to do?
Anything with manual labor.
If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Hi.
Great answer. Angela Johnson. You're a beast. You're
Thanks,
amazing.
Man. Thanks for having me.
Really pumped to finish the book. I have not gotten into a book in so long. So thanks for having the audio version. And thanks for being fucking interesting.
Thank you.
Sorry for cursing.
it was my favorite one. It's okay.
Thank you. You're on tour dates, AngelaJohnson.com?
Just Angela.com. ANJELAH.com.
That's easy.
Mm-hmm.
That must have been fun when you saw that was available.
Well, somebody stole it at first, and they tried to get me to pay them a lot of money.
Damn.
For it. And I was like, I'm going to go ahead and wait the 7 years until your contract's up, and then I'm just going to swoop in and get it. And so that's what I did.
Good move.
Yeah.
Fucking feisty. I love that. Angela.com, and you're on Twitter and Instagram, Angela
Johnson.
Mm-hmm. And go get the book.
Thank you.
Wherever books are sold. You think it's your last book? Are you going to do another one?
I think I'll do another one. Okay. I don't know when, but... I'm sure I have another one.
I hate that I even asked you that. It's like, that's one of my big pet peeves. Like when people are like on the field after
next?
They win the Super Bowl, like, you think you can do it again? You're like, give me 5 minutes, man, to enjoy. All right. You're the best.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here.